My eyes immediately dart to the 88-91 formula.
Mm-hmm.
Seems interesting. I wondered what the calculations are behind that. You know that where is that coming from?
Well, it's part of a rather complicated set of models that we've been using and testing, and that my partner Gordon Krovitz has some experience with at the Wall Street Journal, although those aren't the exact numbers that I think characterize the journal. I think their numbers are actually better than that. But so it's based on a lot of different calculations of, for example, how many more page views subscribers engage in than non-subscribers, because they're much more avid consumers of whatever. So, and it also has to do with whether is the last 10% of your advertising, if you lost the last 10% of your advertising inventory, would you lose 10% of your advertising revenue? Obviously, you wouldn't, because that's the stuff you're selling as remnant space, et cetera. So the key is to figure out how to optimize your ad inventory, and at the same time that you're targeting your most avid readers as the people who you're asking to subscribe, at the same time that you're offering lots of samples and lots of, in effect, free circulation to more casual readers, which keeps your page views up and keeps your ad revenue up.
Sure. Does the journal then become a model of what you're talking about here?
No, the journal's numbers are different.
Sure. Oh, then maybe not a model so much for specifically the 88-91
number. It becomes one of many case histories of publishers that have successfully been able to do this.
Fair enough. And in all of the cases, we're talking about leaving much of the site open to anyone and essentially picking what content can be charged for.
Yeah, and I think there are several operative dynamics there. One is people who, the most avid users, will pay for the convenience of knowing that any page they look at, anything they want to see, they're not going to get a wall that confronts them. And second, that there are lots of different ways to skin that cat. For example, if you made the headline and the first two paragraphs of everything free, you'd get a lot of page views out of that, even at the same time that you were charging people who wanted to read further. So that would be one type of method to do it.
And that comes into play in calculating 88-91?
Yeah.
Sure. How do you even begin to make that calculation without knowing what a paper strategy would be for how much content they charge for?
Well, part of it is we help them develop that strategy to get them toward that kind of goal. Now, that could be different. The danger of looking at any of those slides in isolation is, as we try to explain there, that's a generic model. But for example, just take the most obvious example, if your advertising is yielding not a whole lot of money, and yet you think you can charge a lot for your circulation, then you wouldn't care as much about losing even 20% of your ad revenue if 20% of X is a low number than you would if 20% of X is a high number. So these were meant to be, illustrations of how you could apply the most important principle, which is this is a hybrid model, and it's not an either-or proposition.
Sure.
Because, basically, we developed those slides because in the first conversations we were having at the very beginning, and now this has changed dramatically because I think everybody understands this, but in the first conversations, you have publishers who were saying, all right, I get $10 million a year in online advertising revenue, so you have to show me where I'm going to get $10 million a year in online circulation revenue, because if you don't, I know I'm going to lose my $10 million in online ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say to them, well, actually, you may lose $1 million in online ad revenue.
And the ad revenue on the subscribers, you're assuming, is a higher CPM.
Yeah. So you may lose that, but you're going to gain circulation revenue online. And equally important, you're going to improve your bottom line on your print side, because your cost per acquisition for print subscribers is going to go down, because you're suddenly going to be able to offer bundles. So you'll be offering me, if I subscribe to the print model, a discount on my online subscription. Now, there are two things going on when you do that. The first is I'm seeing that I'm getting a discount for doing something, which is always a way to help, you know, to improve sales.
Sure.
Second, underlying that whole thing is the message, by the way, if you don't buy the print, you're not getting it for free online. So stop thinking of that as your alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that is a really kind of suicidal alternative. At the same time that newspapers are declaring, well, we have to charge more for our print subscriptions, and yet we're still free online, you take someone like, you know, my 25-year-old daughter, who might be intrigued by John Meacham's new version of Newsweek,
mm-hmm.
and she might even be willing to pony up, because she has such a generous father, the increased newsstand price of the new Newsweek, but all of that will stop her in her tracks when she says, oh, wait a minute, you know, Meacham's giving it to me for free online, so why do I have to do any of this?
Sure.
And as a 25-year-old, she's just as comfortable, if not more comfortable, reading it online than she is, you know, getting it in a newsstand.
Right. Well, I'm her age group, so I get that for sure. In the in your examples, you refer both to annual and month-to-month subscriptions as well as micropayments?
Yeah. Our e-commerce engine is going to offer all of those things so that publishers can experiment and decide what works best.
Sure. So when you refer to micropayments at this, I know, obviously we're talking hypothetically here, but mm-hmm. if it's a micropayment of a quarter per article,
mm-hmm.
and then you say with a total of 6 per subscriber per month, what does that mean?
That was just meant to quantify, because we were saying 5% of the paying customers will be micropayers. So
okay.
We wanted to figure out, all right, well, what kind of revenue can you ascribe to? And so we said, all right, let's say they do an average of 6 per month, or whatever we said there. Now, it could be that it's 10% and they do an average of 2, but we were just trying to get to some numbers.
Sure. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I just wanted to...
Yeah, and our view, as you can tell from that, is that we don't think micropayments are going to be a huge part of this deal, but who knows? I mean, that's the whole point of trying everything.
Sure. Well, what's your skepticism there?
I think that people really want, especially given the way we're going to have a common password across all platforms, all newspapers and magazines, that they'll go for the convenience of just having a subscription as opposed to stopping mm-hmm. and buying something. Even though in our case, when they have to stop and buy it, they'll just have to do it with one click because they'll have a password. They won't have to set up an account every time they want to spend for an article.
They'd essentially be told this costs you whatever, and you're already signed in.
Yeah, put your password in, and you'll just get charged whatever it is, the 25 cents.
Sure.
So it will eliminate that piece of it, but still, my gut is that subscriptions will win the day, but I don't want to bet on it.
Sure.
So we're, because I could be completely wrong.
So the assumption here that's not written in the slide is 95% are annual or
monthly, and 5% come from micropayments.
Sure. Is that the assumption in all of the slides? Just if after we get off the call, I'll just run the numbers in my not in my head, unfortunately. For setting a price point, I know we're talking hypothetically, but does a $60 online subscription for 1 year of a regional newspaper seem like a decent point to start at?
We just put that in as a hypothetical model, and when I was asked that at the newspaper meeting, I said it's purely hypothetical, and some of our models it's 50, and some of it it's 70, and some of it's less, but I just, especially in a group, I mean, I think it was, I don't think it's a great idea for us to be making these presentations in groups, and we might not even make any anymore, but because we just prefer dealing meeting with publishers individually, stressing that they are going to make individual decisions about whether to charge, how to charge, what to charge, monthly, daily, annually, 3 samples before you charge, 5 samples, and that's not a conversation we feel comfortable having in a group.
Sure. I guess there's a paradox, right? You want to negotiate individually, but the plan only really works if there's some sizable group that allows you to have a...
No, I don't think that's right, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
The reason I don't think that's right, I mean, someone at a... You know, we were meeting with the publisher of a major, you know, city newspaper, not a national newspaper, but a big city newspaper, and he said, well, what do you think you need to achieve critical mass? I said, in this town, I'm looking at it. Which is to say, the thing that, you know, if you're the publisher of a newspaper, you know, in a major city, one assumes your reporting, especially on local issues, is really the critical mass, especially if you're the only newspaper in that city.
Mm-hmm. At this point, it's fair to say in most cities that they're unrivaled, but there's certainly a working theory out there that the minute any of those big city papers start charging, they're going to encourage competition they don't currently have, that the free blogs that much derided now for not providing reporting will in fact begin to put up much
why?
More competition along those
lines. Will they be able to? How are they going to pay for it?
By starting with a model that is, you know, that isn't a 150 person newsroom, and so even if the end product is not as good, it's free, and that's sort of the hardest thing to compete with.
But again, if what you're striving for is to get the 5 or 10% of your most committed readers to pay, then you can afford to have that happen, and you can't afford not to do it.
So what are we talking about, 5 or 10% of monthly uniques?
Yeah.
Okay, because also, I mean, again, I'm playing devil's advocate, pushing back on this. So the most of monthly uniques are kind of junk, right? It's the reader who lands on the site once, maybe because they came through a referral.
That's why I'm saying 5 to 10%.
But we think what's that based on, that it could be that portion?
Well, for example, the journal's experience is it's more than 10%, much more.
Sure.
And some local newspapers that have done this have been able to attract more, where they've done it gradually turn the faucet. But that's why we're starting low.
Mm. Right, okay, all right, fair enough. Because one of the things people bring up is if you looked at, instead of monthly uniques, a statistic like how many people come to a news site even just 3 times in a month,
mm-hmm.
that's a much smaller number, obviously. Are you using any of those metrics to determine the
5-10% number? That is the way we get to such a small fraction.
Okay.
It's all of those things. I mean, and then, you know, there's another piece that actually cuts both ways. There are some newspapers, for example, some overseas, that have a ton of monthly uniques, but only like a third of them actually live in the country where the newspaper's published.
Mm, sure.
Now, what that tells you is the advertising that they're getting from those visitors is probably next to nothing, because most advertising online is not thinking about the fact that if I'm a English newspaper, you know, I have all these people in New York.
Yeah.
It's British Telecom advertising or Sky News or something.
Sure.
So the reason I say that cuts both ways is those are likely to be casual visitors who just found something in a search.
Yeah.
That's the bad news. But the good news is that if you sacrifice them, you're not giving up any advertising revenue. And the better news is, if they really want to read your paper in London and they're in New York, they're obviously going to buy it online, because it's not like they can go down to the newsstand and buy it.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know if we're talking about the Telegraph, but I know in their experience, it's they do so well on like a site like Dig, but then, like you're saying, those readers are just not.
I'm not talking about any particular.
Sure, but they're not. Someone coming from Dig is the threshold to pay, even if it's a micropayment, is very high.
But if someone's coming from Dig who already has an account,
sure, it makes it it lowers the threshold certainly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. In terms of the micropayments in your account, I mean, do you envision it, if it were to catch on or work, that you'd essentially have some amount in the bank sort of an easy pass sort of system?
Could be. There are several alternatives we're looking at. We're probably going to adopt all of them. You wait a month before you charge their credit card, or they have a PayPal-like account. You know, we may even use PayPal to do that. There are lots of possibilities.
Sure. There are a few more questions about other slides, but before I ask that, I just did, were there other, did you get pushback at the meeting in any way that, you know, made you come back, and or were there other particularly interesting questions you got that might help explain some of these slides?
Not really. The only thing that gave me hesitation was I'm just not comfortable with the idea that there's going to be any kind of a group decision.
Sure.
And I think the staff of that association is trying to steer them that way, and I'm not sure that's a very good idea.
Not a good idea. I mean, obviously there's got to be antitrust concerns, but also because...
Well, it's a combination of antitrust concerns and the fact that groups making decisions take a notoriously long time.
Sure. So just to, you know, briefly on the other slide, there's reference to restoring a balance of power with search engines, and then you just sort of say, I assume you're referring to some news aggregators as well.
Yeah.
What are we talking about there? I mean, is that through legal avenues?
Through legal avenues, perhaps, but it's more through just the ability to, you know, level the playing field by negotiating from strength.
That sounds like something that maybe where being a group is much more of an advantage than what we were previously talking about.
Yeah, but that's a different kind of group. That's not a group deciding what they're doing vis-a-vis the consumer.
Sure. Sure, sure. I was interested, I hadn't seen, I mean, maybe it had been reported, but I'm not sure, David Boies and Ted Olson's names.
Mm-hmm.
Are they on as, I was presuming, as legal counsel?
Yeah, they're both old friends of mine, and when I started thinking about this a month or two ago, I decided, well before their current effort together.
No, very sure.
To get them involved in this.
In what sort of role?
Well, in part, a smaller part than the larger part, in part to give us antitrust counsel, which we're operating under, and second, to we want to make sure we don't even get close to a line, let alone go near a line, and second, to formulate negotiating strategies with some of the third parties we've been talking about.
All right, and so when I get off the phone and crunch the numbers again with some of the assumptions we went over, are there any other assumptions that were sort of built into these slides but not written out here that I should keep in mind?
Well, there are a lot built into them that aren't written out, but
sure.
they're more sort of, you know, subsets of how much, what's the current CPM someone is getting?
Sure.
How much will that rise among, you know, how different will the CPM for subscribers be? How many more page views disproportionately will they provide? I mean, all that stuff is sort of baked into it.
How about on the page views? What is there a working assumption in these slides at least on what?
I don't have it in front of me, but the assumption is that the people who end up subscribing will on average provide a significantly higher number of page views per month than those going forward getting it for free.
Like tenfold, a hundredfold?
No, it's probably, you know, a conservative, you know, 30 or 40%, something like that.
Okay.
I mean, it's much lower than the reality that anyone's experienced.
Okay, fair enough. And did you get skeptical looks, encouraging looks on some of these assumptions?
I'd say we didn't get really any skeptical looks at all. I think by the time I was in that room, I had met with at least half of the people. You know, we had met with at least half of the people one on one who were in that room, and you know, I didn't feel that kind of skepticism. I think they're just trying to decide what to do. I just don't think they should be deciding it as a group.
Sure. Are you at a stage of signing with anyone? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we've signed a couple. We're going to sign some more, but we're sort of holding off on making any public announcements about that probably for 3 or 4 weeks.
Sure. When we say sign, signed a deal, not just the, I see the steps slide. So not just the non-disclosure agreement, but a contract.
Signed a letter of intent.
Okay. Fair. And we're talking about the big city newspapers, or?
I'm just not going to go any further.
Fair enough. And so the time frame then is announcing some of those in 3 to 4 weeks.
Probably, yeah.
And what comes after that?
Well, what comes before that is we got a lot more talking with them to do, and we're talking with some potential partners. There's a lot of moving pieces going on. But then, I mean, what comes after that, as that slide indicates, is with the ones who have signed as affiliates, we sit down with them and really devise a model using their real numbers and our real assumptions, so that they get comfortable with a plan for starting to do this.
Sure. Find out what their current CPMs are, what their what they think the price point is in their particular market.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are all kinds of assumptions in there, such as their cost per print acquisition.
Oh yeah, that seems very high to me. I don't. That's not something I'm very familiar with. The print acquisition cost.
If you do the all-in circulation costs of a newspaper, it's not that high.
Okay, which is by which you mean, so not just the
television advertising, radio, call centers, the whole thing.
Fair enough. Well, I guess that's it. Worked. It worked when it worked, and I guess it
sort of
doesn't. All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this. And I wanted to say I was a Bill's Content subscriber back when what were years were those?
1998 to 2001.
All right, so I was.
Well, thanks.
I was in middle school. When first issue came out, but I have the complete set back.
Really lowered our demographic.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Take care.
I appreciate it.
Sure enough. Bye.